Okay, I'd like to acknowledge our sponsors, Jake and Karen Abelevitz, for our lunch and our learning today. Le'iloi Nishmas Eliyahu ben Abba and Leah Bas Avram, Jake's parents, the Neshama should have an Aliyah. All right, this week's Parsha is Tazria, and although we have the Parsha's Para this week, and we have a special Haftarah. In any event, we would have a special Haftarah because of... Rosh Chodesh this week, sorry. We have a special Haftarah. Nevertheless, I want to take a look at a little bit of our Parsha and with a strong connection to the Haftarah. So, just get the page here. Haftarah, Yikra... Okay. All right, so the Parsha is Tazria. Did I say Tazria was the Parsha?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right, so good. So the Parsha is Tazria, and the Haftarah can be found on page 1170. We'll get to the Haftarah in a minute. The Parsha itself, the majority of the Parsha, or a good chunk, if you will, of the Parsha, is on the topic of Tzaraas. Even though next week is Metzora, there's plenty of Tzaraas to go around in this week's Sedra as well. If you just look at the beginning of the Sedra, page 608, the laws of Tzaraas start almost immediately. The first eight psukim are in a different topic, and then we move to the laws of Tzaraas, chapter 13. And that takes us through quite a bit of the Parsha, and then we pick it up with Metzora, which is also the laws of Tzaraas. So the topic that I want to discuss today is understanding the connection between the principle or the prohibition, or the phenomenon, let's say it that way, the phenomenon of Lashon Hara and the phenomenon of Tzaraas, which we will refer to as leprosy, although it is not leprosy, it's a spiritual disease manifested on a person's skin, but it is not leprosy per se. But that's how it's translated, and that's what we will use. Now, why is there a connection between Lashon Hara and Tzaraas to begin with? So that could be sort of a whole shear unto itself, where we, you know, how we make this connection. But we're going to start with the basic thesis, the basic principle, taking that as a given, that there is a connection between Lashon Hara and Tzaraas. So we'll look at that given as sourced in the Talmud. Take a look in the sheets that I gave you here. This is an English translation, I think the Sansino translation online, of the Talmud in Masechet Arachin. And so if you, the pages aren't numbered, but flip the first page, so the equivalent of what would be page two here, the side two of that little booklet, right? And it's the third long paragraph begins, Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni said. Everybody see that? Right? You open up your little booklet, flip the page, it's right there. Okay. Actually, we start one paragraph before that. Rav Dimi, brother of Rav Safra, learned, let no man ever talk in praise of his neighbor. If you talk in his praise, he will come to disparage him. So in other words, Lashon Hara is bad. Lashon Tov is bad. Because you'll say, what a nice person he is. And then your friend will say, you think he's such a nice person? I can tell you X, Y, Z. Right, so there are risks all around here. There are some who say Rav Dimi, brother of Safra, was ill. Rav Safra entered to inquire of his state of health. He said, "May it come home to me that I have kept whatever the rabbis have enjoined." He said, "How have you kept the command? Let no man ever talk in praise of his neighbor, for through talking in his praise, he will come to disparage him." He answered, "I have not heard of it. For had I heard of it, I would have kept it." Right, so that's just sort of a little side point here. And now to our main point. Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni said in the name of Yochanan, because of seven things the plague of leprosy is incurred. And they are, the seven things, slander, Lashon Hara, the shedding of blood, a vain oath, incest, arrogance, robbery, and envy. For these three things, there is the consequence of tsaras, of leprosy. Now, I don't want to go into each one of these in particular, but my point is to look at them as a whole, and to see that in the mind's eye of Chazal, the notion of slander, lashon hara, of this type of negative talk, is up there in the same breath, held in the same bucket as the shedding of blood, vain oath, incest, arrogance, robbery, and envy. So these are all, you know, this is a pretty significant list. And one could be forgiven if one might have thought a priori that slander or lashon hara, more generally speaking, you know, is not equivalent to incest. Is not, you know, you wouldn't say those in the same breath. Maybe you should say them in the same breath, but I think most people, if you would ask them to put, you know, two things together, you know, like when your kids, you know, try to make the groupings and, you know, what things go together and what don't, if you were given this grouping, I'm not sure that we would have naturally associated, you know, lashon hara with, you know, with robbery and incest and, you know. So my point here is a sort of a more general point, and that is that it's really, really bad. Let's just read a little further. Because of slander, as it is written, whoso slandereth his neighbor in secret, him I will destroy for bloodshed, as it is written, and let there not fail front the house of Job. One hath an issue, or that is a leper. All right, et cetera, et cetera. But that's the main point that I wanted to sort of bring out from this. So, so let's understand here, assuming that there is this connection between tsara'as and lashon hara. So why does that make any sense at all, that tsara'as would be the consequence for a person speaking lashon hara? So just speculate with me, if you would, for a moment. Any thoughts just off the top of your head? Why is that a, you know, I mean, I would have thought the, you know, the, if, you know, just without knowing anything, say, what do you think the Torah's punishment for speaking lashon hara would be? I don't know, I would come up with maybe, canker sores in the mouth, I don't know, you know, some oral disease or some, you know, something that affects speech on some level, or the ability to speak, or something that. But what's the connection between tsaras, a skin disease, if you will, and lashon hara? And ultimately, we want to get to what is the spiritual significance of it. Yeah.
Okay. A skin disease, in a sense, is physically losing boundaries. It affects you. It's your skin is your relationship with the outside world.
Right.
And lashon hara is losing boundaries in some sense. It's using people as objects. I don't know. That's what.
Okay, so one possibility is that tsaras is, you know, a person's skin is their boundary between themselves and the outside world. And when this is infected, you know, a person loses their boundaries.
Literally loses skin.
Right, literally loses skin. And now the boundary between a person and their environment, it becomes blurred. And you're suggesting that lashon hara is about the blurring of boundaries. Just expound on that for a moment. How so?
I'm working on it as I'm speaking.
Yeah, okay. All right.
But it's boundaries. It's problem the boundaries between individual people. It's like I'm me and you're you, and if I'm using you for me, I'm not recognizing your you-ness.
Okay, so in other words, when we objectify another person, then they sort of we no longer give them sort of independent status as a significant being.
We're relating to them as an extension to ourselves.
Right, as an extension of myself, and I think that's a fair assessment. My only sort of pushback on that would be you could say that about a lot of, you know, Ben Adam L'Chavero Averas. You know, if I steal from somebody, I'm sort of, you know, objectifying them by making by blurring the boundaries and you know, although on this list we do have tzaraas as right. What's the last one on the list here? Arrogance, robbery, and envy.
Yeah, well, yeah, right.
So maybe all of these are blurring of boundaries. But there are other, you know what, my initial instinct is to say there are Bein Adam L'Chaveiro violations that are not on this list.
The other ones don't negate their identity as people. If I take something from you, I'm taking something from you, you're still you. I'm not.
Although robbery is on the list here.
Oh, well, no. It's okay. Not distorting anything.
Right. Okay. All right. But I think the point sort of generally is fair, even if I have a pushback on it. Yeah.
Somebody else
want to
go?
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, lazy. Skin is that you're exposing yourself to other people.
Right.
So by the skin, he's judging you. I'm white skin person, he's a yellow skin person, he's a black person. And warts also exposing the person.
Okay, so a person is presented to the world. Through their appearance, and a word is also the way we present ourselves to the world.
Yes.
Okay,
so if you inflict somebody bad words on somebody, so your presentation, your skin gets affected.
Okay, all right. So both Lashon Hara and Tzaraas are sort of about the how we present to the world.
Yeah.
Right. So. When we speak ill of somebody else, we use our words, which is sort of the, if you want to say, a spiritual way we present ourselves. So we get a physical malady, which impacts how we physically present to the world. So
the speaker by itself,
right? Okay.
The heart is not only applied to the human; it also can apply to any object.
Right, so tzaraas can apply to a house. Tzaraas can apply to a clothing. Right, so which the walls of the house or a person's clothing. So certainly, a person's clothing is also representative of how they present to the world, and maybe even the walls of a home. Maybe, yeah, Norm.
One of the consequences of tzaraas is being set aside from the community.
Yes.
Right? Well, because you're weakening...
Solitary confinement.
You're weakening the community by your talk. It's an undermining of the community as a whole. So, therefore, you're isolated from the community as a punishment for it.
Okay. So, when a person undermines sort of civil society, right, by speaking Lashon Hara... When you speak Lashon Hara about somebody else, not just damaging that person, we're damaging the fabric of society. So when we damage the fabric of society, so the consequence is that we are isolated. And I think that is fair.
The society isolates you.
Right, or the society isolates you, right? So I think that that's fair. But again, a little pushback that I have on that is the isolation is a rule that is applied to a mitzora, somebody who has leprosy, that is not organically part of tzaraas. It's the rule that we say if a person is tzaraas, this is what we do to that person. So yes, I think it does mesh well. But that's my little pushback on that. Yeah.
So if we're drawing a line between slander and tzaraas, so tzaraas eats away at the skin and
right.
Gradually destroys everything. With slander, I'm thinking that sometimes even small things that ultimately eat away at the individual that you're talking about and destroy that individual. And
death by a thousand cuts.
Death by a thousand cuts.
Right.
We could watch the...
So I would... What?
No, I don't want to get...
Yeah.
I would just... It can be over something small and then it can be made into something tremendous, but
okay.
It eats away at the person.
Right. So I would say, I would take what you're saying and raise you one level up. So even small things can be, what's the word they used?
It's
corrosive. All right, so I think that's true, and I would say it's corrosive or damaging to the party that you're speaking about,
right,
but also to the self.
Uh-huh.
And I would suggest that Lashon Hara is, even as it has a victim, but there is also something self-corrosive and degrading, and so therefore, you know, the destruction of the skin reflects what you were saying on that level, but also it's like, you know, it's not that when I say Lashon Hara, it's the victim is only on the other side. I am doing something bad to myself as well. Yeah, go it, right, both directions. Yeah, Norm.
Yeah, because, you know, if you're constantly doing that, then you're really not working on yourself, are you? You're not being creative. You're just
negating others.
Taking this other path that's not helpful.
Right.
You know?
Right. Okay. All right. So I want to take a look at the haftarah now. And I think that the haftarah gives us, I believe, a really important insight into the nature of lashon hara as a consequence of tzaras. So let's take a look at the haftarah. I guess ideally, really, we should look at just tzaras and the parsha, but that came a little late. We're going to skip that part. But we know that tzaras, to just a couple of bullet points on tzaras. Tzaras, as I said, is leprosy. A person gets it. He is sent out of the community. Anybody know anything else about any of the laws of tzaras, just to throw out there? Any other laws of tzaras? Right? Yeah?
So a Kohen has to obviously decide if the person has tzaras.
Yes, a Kohen must ascertain whether the blemish which the person has is indeed tzaras or not. And it's a... Yeah, go on.
Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt. But the reason basically is because a Kohen is the cure for it, just the same, because a Kohen embodies love, you know, which is the direct opposite of what tzaras has done.
Right. So many Mefarshim say exactly that the Kohen is the perfect designee for assessing it, because if Lashon Hara is about hatred between people, the Kohen is, you know, supposed to be the children of Aharon, Ohev Shalom, Rodeh Shalom, Ohev Esabrios, and Makarvin Latara, somebody who exudes love of people. So it's not just that the Kohen has to assess it, but it's a long, drawn-out process. The Kohen looks at it. If he can make an immediate assessment, fine. If not, then they have to wait a certain amount of days, and he has to look at it again. He makes a declaration. The tzaras is not considered declared tzaras unless he actually declares it to be so. And so he functions as a doctor, as a spiritual doctor, if you will. And it's a pretty engaged process to determine, unless it's abundantly clear immediately, it's a pretty elongated process or detailed process to determine whether the person is a Metzora or not. So those are some of the sort of the basic laws of Metzora. Skin disease gets thrown out of the community, this assessment by the Kohen, and ultimately, you know, comes back into the community. There's a karbon which is offered, and going to the mikvah and becoming being purified. So let's look now at the haftarah of Tazria, and I this is on page 1170 in the back of the art scroll. This is from Sefer Malachim, the book of Malachim, chapter 4. We're going to skip the first four psukim and get to the main storyline in the Haftarah. Page 1171, Perek He in Sefer Malachim, Pasuk 1. V'Na'aman. Na'aman, Sar Tzva Melech Aram Haya. Na'aman was the general of the, he's the chief of, I guess, the secretary of defense of Melech Aram. Ish Gadol Lifnei Adonav, very important person. Unesufanim Kivo Nasan Hashem Teshua La'aram. Hashem had given victory for Aram. The man was a great warrior. Ish haya gibor chayel mitzora. And he was a mitzora. Okay. So here we have a nice connection between our Haftarah and the Parsha. The Parsha talks about Tzaraas. The Haftarah talks about Tzaraas. And we can go home. But in fact, I think it's much more than that. It's not just simply that when the rabbis associated this story in the Navi with our Parsha, it's because this guy happened to be a Mitzora. I think that there's something much deeper going on here. So let's continue with the story. V'aram yatzu gidudim v'yishpu me'eretz na'ara k'tana. And Aram had gone out raiding parties and captured a young girl from the land of Israel. And she served Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, "My master's prayers should be directed to the prophet who is in Samaria, and then he will heal him from his tzaras." So this young maiden who had been taken captive, who was working in the house of Naaman as a whatever for his wife. So she says, "Listen, I see he's a mitzora. I have a good suggestion. Go to the Navi in Eretz Yisrael. He'll help you out." Okay. So Naaman went and told his master, saying, "Such and such spoke." And told his master, "Such and such spoke the girl from the land of Canaan. The king of Aram said, 'Go to him, and I will send a letter to the king of Israel.' He went and took with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 gold, and 10 changes of clothes." So Melech Aram said, "You know, go. We'll send a letter to Melech Yisrael." And, we'll even send money, we'll send all types of things in order to grease the wheels here so that we can deal with the tzaras. Pasuk 6. He brought to the king of Israel the letter which said, "And now when this letter comes to you, behold, I have sent my servant Naaman to you, that you shall heal him from his tzaras." Okay, so that's the letter which said. Now, how did the king of Israel respond? When the king responded, when Yehoram, the king of Israel, responded, he read the letter, he tore his clothes, Pasuk says, and he said, "Am I God that I can kill and give life? And this person sends to me to heal a man of his tzaras? Know now and see that he seeks a pretext against me." The bottom line is that he didn't believe that this was, he thought this was all a setup, right? Maybe some type of plot, some type of situation where this is just a pretext for war. Whatever it is, nothing good can come out of this. Pasuches. Vayikishmo Elisha ish Elohim ki kara melech Yisrael es begadav. Elisha hears what the king of Israel did, that he ripped his clothes. Vayishlach es hamelech lemor lama karata begadach. He sends a word to him. He says, "Why did you rip your clothing in mourning here? It's not a terrible thing. Yavona Eli, let Naaman, let the guy come to me. V'yedaki yesh navi b'Yisrael. Let him know that there's such a thing as a true prophet in Israel." Okay. Pasuk 9, Vayavo Naaman b'susav uvirichbo. And Naaman comes with his horse and chariot. Vayamod pesach habayis le'Elisha. And he stands outside the house of Elisha the prophet. Vayishlach elav Elisha malach le'mor. And Elisha sends a messenger saying, "Haloch v'rachatzta sheva pamim b'yarden v'yashov b'sarcha lecha utahar." Here's the deal. Go to the Jordan River and dunk in the Jordan River, and you will be purified and your tzaras will go away. What's Naaman's, what would you expect Naaman's response to be? If you don't read the next pasuk, what would you expect his response to be to that?
Wouldn't he follow the rules?
What?
Wouldn't he follow what he said?
Okay, he'll follow the rules.
He went there to get healed.
Right, he went there to get healed. Okay, not going to take the medicine. So what actually does he do? Vayiktzof Naaman vayilach. Naaman gets all annoyed, and he said, "For this I came to. For this I came to tell me to go into the Jordan River. Tell me that you have some, newfangled technology, biotech. You spent $1 billion to create a new pill. Tell me to go in the Jordan River. That for that I came." Vayomer hine amarta Eli. Yitze Yatzov. Did I skip something? Vayiktzof Naaman. He says, "V'karab b'shem Hashem lokav v'heinif yado al makom v'asaf hamitzora halotov amana uparpar naharos damesek." I got plenty of good rivers in Damascus, because better than anything you got in Israel. Halo erchatz bahem betaharti. I'll go home. I can take a bath in the in the rivers of Damascus. I don't need you for that. Goodbye. Vayifen vayelech bechema. He turns around and he walks out in anger. Pasuk 13. Vayikshu avadav vayidabru elav. His servants come to him and they say, "What's the downside here? What's the downside? You know what? We came anyway. Is it going to hurt you to take a dip in the Jordan?" Vayom ravi davar gadol hanavi diber elacha halotase. So he told you to take a placebo. You're here already. Take the placebo anyway. And he told you to drink orange juice. You have orange juice in Demet? Drink his orange juice. What's the big deal? It's not going to hurt you. Afki amar elecha rechatz utahar. He told you what to do. Go ahead and do it. 14. So Naaman decides, okay, there is really no downside to this. Vayered vayitbol bayardein. Sheva pe'amim. He dunks. He dips himself in the Jordan River 7 times. Kidvar ish Elohim, as he was instructed. Vayashav bisaro ki bisar na'ar katon vayitar. And his flesh was transformed to the flesh of a young boy, and he became cleansed. Vayashav elish Elohim, he goes back to the Navi. V'chol machanehu, with all his camp. Vayavo vayamod ufanav vayomer, hinena yadati ki en Elohim b'chol ha'aretz ki im b'Yisrael. So he says, now, Elisha, I know that there really is only one true God. And please, kachna bracha me'esav decha. Please take this blessing, take this gift on my behalf. So what does Elisha respond? Vayomer chai Hashem asher amadati lefanavi mekach. I swear by God's name, I will not take a thing from you. Vayiftzar bo lakachas vayima'ein. And he tried to push him to accept the gift, but he refused. Vayomer Naaman, and then Naaman says, "Valo yutan nale avdecha masat semen pradim adama." May there at least be given to your servant 2 mule loads of earth, for your servant will never again offer a burnt offering or a peace offering to other gods, only to Hashem. Okay. The exact meaning of what he's asking here, the bottom line is, he's saying, I'm with the program, I'm not going to be Oved Avodah Zarah anymore. And therefore, he says, may Hashem forgive me. Right? God forgive me. Ladavar hazeh yislach Hashem la'avdecha. God should forgive your servant, meaning me, Naaman. Bivo Adoni Beit Rimon. Because when my boss, the king of Aram, is going to go to the Avodah Zarah house of Beit Rimon and worship Avodah Zarah there, and he's going to bow down, Hu nishan al yadi, he's going to lean on me, v'yishtachavesi Beis Rimon, and so I will be forced to bow down in the idol, the house of Beit Rimon, to the idol of Rimon, and yislach Hashem l'avdecha b'davar hazeh, saying, may Hashem forgive me for this thing which I'm going to be forced to do. This pasuk, by the way, is the basis of a large Talmudic discussion about worshiping Avodah Zarah, being a Marano, things like that, when a person sort of outwardly appears to be a pagan, but inwardly is not our discussion, but just a note on that. So Elisha responds to him. He says, "Vayomer lo lech l'shalom." He says, "Don't worry about it. You're covered. You're good to go. Lech l'shalom. So don't worry about the fact that you're going to be bowing down to an avodah zara. It's you're covered." The context is self-explanatory to God, and you don't have to worry about it. Vayomer, you don't need forgiveness for that. Vayomer lech l'shalom. Vayelech miito kivrat haaretz. He said to him, "Go in peace." And he traveled a stretch of land from him, and he went on his way. Okay, this is the story of Naaman and the Metzora. Yeah, what did you want to say?
I must be missing something. He acknowledges God,
right?
But then he says he's going to go back to the way he was living before.
Well, what he says is that he acknowledges God. He's not converting to Judaism. Not everybody who's not Jewish has to convert to Judaism to be a good Gentile. But what he's saying is that in his job as working for his boss in Melech Amelech Aram, one of his duties is to help him when he goes to worship Avodah Zarah. And when he's there, he has to help the king, bow down, and perforce he's going to be bowing down to Avodah Zarah as well. Not because he's going to be worshiping the Avodah Zarah, but because just simply helping his boss, the king, to do his service to the idol, he's going to be prostrating his own self in that. He doesn't mean to be doing it, he doesn't intend to be doing it, but that's Lamaisa in actuality what he's going to be doing. And so he says, forgive me for that. And Elisha says, don't worry, you don't need forgiveness. You don't intend to be worshiping out of Avodah Zarah. You're not worshiping out of Avodah Zarah. It might look bad, but you don't need forgiveness for it. Yeah?
I just said to be able to keep his head on the shoulders.
To be able to, right. In order that Melech Aram should not kill him. So, which might be the consequence for not helping your boss if your boss is the king in biblical days. Okay, so my question is, I have a theory here why this is the perfect haftorah for our parsha of Metzora. Right? Our haftorah here is the perfect haftorah. Maybe there are other ones as well. But this is the perfect haftarah to reflect the notion of tzaras, the Lashon Hara tzaras connection. This haftarah is not just about somebody who's a mitzora, and our parsha is about a mitzora, but this haftarah gets to the essence of what is the cause of tzaras, namely Lashon Hara. So I have a theory, but before I give you my theory, anybody just want to suggest why this haftarah might be more than just skin deep? Right. So this is what I want you to think about. I want you to think about expectations and misconceptions. What the expectations of the various actors are in this story and the misconceptions that they had. So who are the actors in the story? Who do we have in the story here? No. Start from the beginning. So number one, we have Naaman. How are we going to do this? Let's do it this way. Okay. Naaman. Okay? Naaman is number one. Who else do we have in the story?
The maiden.
Okay, the maiden. Okay.
The king.
All right, the king.
And the prophet. Elisha.
We have the prophet. Elisha.
And the friend of...
Which king are you talking about? Who said king?
King of Israel. There are two kings. King Aram.
All right, so let's put over here. The king of Israel.
Yeah.
And... King of Aram. Okay, and are we missing anybody or is that
servants?
Which servants? The servants.
The servants are telling him to go bathe.
Right, okay, so that's over. Okay, we're going to put him.
Next to Lam is a servant.
Yeah, they'll put him over here. Okay.
Elisha, sorry, you have Elisha.
So Elisha we have right over here.
Mm-hmm.
Elisha. Okay, so
is the point that you're grasping at that
I didn't say anything, so I'm not grasping it.
I apologize. The point that you're suggesting is that the very act of, if we could say, gossip inappropriate conversation having been acted out here again by basically questioning and then really denouncing what he was told to do, taking it and undermining and effectively slandering the prophet. and basically showing that he really deserved to be in Tzara.
Okay, in that direction, but even a little bit broader than that, So let's start with the beginning here. Naaman, the general, he serves the king, and it says he's a great warrior. And who goes out to war? Aram had gone out to war in raiding parties and captured a young girl of the land of Israel. So I'm going to put this under the king of Aram, because Aram is represented by, you know, the leader. The king is sort of represented. So Aram goes out. Doesn't say that Naaman went out. He is the military leader. Just says Aram goes out. So Aram goes out, and they capture a girl. Now, what might you have expected to find out about what they did with this young maiden? I think a very good potential expectation would be that these marauding, rioting, you know, people of Aram took a girl and probably raped her. That would not be a bad expectation to have, or a wrong, or maybe an illegitimate expectation. But it would be a bad thing to do, but it would not be an illegitimate expectation. And yet, the Navi tells us that defying perhaps what might be an expectation, this young maiden taken from Israel was not used as somebody's, you know, some king or some general's, piece of meat, but rather she was employed as a servant, of course. I don't mean employed that she got benefits and, health services, but she was the mistress of the, she was the servant to the, to the wife of Naaman. We're talking about a very, very powerful person, a very powerful person here. So she had a good job, actually. If you in relative, you know, if you're going to be taken captive, you know, relative to what could happen. So it's interesting that the Navi tells us that Aram goes out marauding, and he tells us about one woman who is taken captive, and the one woman who's taken captive, perhaps defying expectations. Instead of telling us that she was raped or used in an objectifying fashion, that she's serving in the king's house. Now, I'm not saying that's good in Naaman's house. I'm not saying it's good, but in the relative scale of things, you could have expected it to be a lot worse.
Not only that, she had access to the wife and giving advice to the wife.
Okay, next. So we have here, so that's number one. Expectations being defied. Now, he's got this terrible tzaras. Where does the source of his cure come from? I'm sure when the marauding rioters went out and, you know, captured lots of people, including this young maiden, there was never an expectation, or maybe even after she was hired, or after she was, you know, put, you know, indentured in the house, that that she would play an important role that she does. It is her knowledge, it is her advice, it is her wisdom that leads to the ultimate cure of Naaman. So I think that the expectation that one might have is that, you know, she's a nobody, a nothing, a nobody, just taken captive and cleaning the beds in the house of Naaman. But in fact, defying expectations, what you might describe, if you had to describe her without any foreknowledge, you would have said, okay, a young woman captive. I don't mean to say this, a nobody. Not that anybody's a nobody, but a nobody. But defying expectations, she actually plays an extraordinary important role. So she plays that, so she offers that information. And Naaman goes to the king, and the king says, "I'll help you. I'll help you out." And he sends a letter to Melech Yisrael. Okay, so what does Melech Yisrael do? He assumes that this is a plot against him, right? The truth of the matter is, right? So he assumes the worst. But in fact, defying expectations, and maybe legitimately so, You know, Melech Aram, who's to say that he's a good guy? But the king of Israel is then corrected by the Navi, and the Navi says, don't fall prey to your assumptions and expectations. Defy those expectations. Because in fact, this is something really good going on over here. Don't assume the worst of Melech Aram. There's something really good that can happen here with Naaman coming. Maybe he'll be able to see that Yesh Navi Bisrael, that there is a true prophet in Israel. So after ripping his garment, he has to walk that back. He has to walk that back. Okay, so Naaman comes, and Naaman is given advice by the prophet. What's Naaman's response to that advice by the prophet?
Rejection.
Says that's ridiculous. He assumes really the worst, that this is just all a joke. Like, what, for this I came? I got plenty of good rivers in Damascus. So Naaman takes Elisha's goodwill and his advice, and he, I would say, assumes the worst. But in fact, what Elisha's offering him is really great. Now the servants come along, and who's a servant? A nobody, a nothing. We're talking about in ancient times where unless you're a somebody, you're a nobody. Forget ancient times, just go to medieval times. Forget medieval times. Lots of people behave that way today, right? So who is this? So the servants come along and they tell Naaman, you're here already. The prophet told you to do something. Why don't you go ahead and do it? Naaman actually listens to, he's persuaded. But here we have individuals who, I think, by all assumptions, are really people that shouldn't be paid any attention to. You would assume have no knowledge or no wisdom or anything to offer. They're a servant who are they? But in fact, they have a lot to offer, quite a bit to offer. And because of their wisdom, Naaman ultimately goes into the river and he's in fact cured. Okay. Now Naaman sees that he's cured, and he goes to Elisha and he offers Elisha some type of what's it called, not bounty, tribute, like a tribute. He offers him a tribute. And Elisha says, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I'm not going to take anything from you. And he tries to force him to do so, or pressure him to do so. Vayiftzar vayima'en. He pressures him, and the prophet stands strong, and he says, absolutely not. I'm not going to do it. And by the way, this language in the pasuk here, vayiftzar vayima'en, that he pressures him and he refuses, reminds us of the story of Lot and when the angels come and Lot goes out to try to get them to stay by him. So vayiftzar bam, and he pressures them to come in, to stay in the house. So just something to think about, why this story is actually, this language recalls for us the story of of Lot over there. But if you look at really all the actors in the story, every one of them really sells short in a certain way, the other person. Just what we might have thought about Melech Aram, the Navi tells us otherwise. By the way they treated this young lady, they violated her. The maiden, our expectations of her, totally undone. The king, his expectations of Naaman and the king, totally undermined. Naaman, his expectations of what came from Elisha, everybody in this story, just about, is either somebody he had little expectations of and provided something extraordinary, or somebody who whose thoughts, ideas, or advice was rejected, but ultimately had to be reconceived of in light of what the truth of the matter was. And isn't that really the underpinning of what Lashon Hara is really all about? Lashon Hara is a consistent, or it is a persistent view of other people, selling them short based on our assumptions. Now, there's Lashon Hara where I'm saying bad things about you, and And they know they're bad things, and they're true bad things, and that's one kind of Lashon Hara. But more broadly, even if they, Lashon Hara is sort of the idea of slanderous talk, maybe more rechilus, but either way, the idea of is sort of rooted in, not giving somebody else their due. And even if it's true, the bad stuff that I'm saying about them, that still is really not, if I know that, I saw somebody steal something from a store, and it's true that the guy stole. I don't know the context. Maybe he was stealing because he ran out of money and he needed a life-saving medicine for his wife. That doesn't make it right per se, or it doesn't undermine the fact that he's still stealing. He has to be held accountable for it. But maybe there's some mitigating factors. Even when we're telling the truth about somebody, that is bad stuff about that person, maybe it's not the whole story. Maybe it's not true. And even if it is true, maybe there's some mitigating factors, right? And it happens all the time in mundane experiences, right? When somebody is driving in front of you slowly and you're being frustrated by them, right? So, this person is a terrible driver. But when I'm driving slowly and I'm frustrating the person behind me, there's a reason that I'm driving slowly. Because whatever the reason is. Looking for a parking spot. So when I'm looking for a parking spot, there's nothing wrong with my driving slowly. When the guy in front of me is looking for a parking spot, he's a jerk, right? So the point of the matter is that everybody here in this story, whether Lashon Hara is based on truths or they're based on falsehoods, it always comes down to the issue of not seeing the person in their entirety, not giving them their full due, having lowered expectations of really what we should have of the other party. And everybody does that here to one another in one form or another. And that's why I think this is the perfect fit for our parsha, the perfect haftarah. Because if Tzaras, like the Gemara says, is in fact about Lashon Hara, so this perfectly reflects that. And what is the antidote to Lashon Hara? Tzara'as. How is Tzara'as determined? It's a pretty extensive process. You don't just go to the Kohen. If the Kohen sees it, that it's Tzara'as immediately, so he'll declare it Tzara'as. But the Torah goes out of its way to tell us, if you're not sure if it's Tzara'as, he's got to look at it, he's got to come back, let it wait, let it see how it develops. The whole process of determining whether something is tzara'as is the antidote to the opposite of Lashon Hara. The process of tzara'as is an intensive process of determining the facts of the ground to see what the truth of the matter is. That's the opposite of Lashon Hara and the psychological conceptual underpinnings that motivate us to speak Lashon Hara. Or that allow us to speak Lashon Hara. There's one last thing here, which is the last four psukim of the Haftarah. So the last four psukim of the Haftarah tell us that Naaman says, listen, I'm going back, I'm not converting to Judaism, right? I'm going back, I'm still a Gentile, but God should forgive me because in my job, it's going to look like I'm being Oved Avodah Zarah. I'm going to be in a private house, so not a lot of people are going to see it. But still, at the end of the day, I got to help him bow down to the idol, and I'm going to be forced to bow down at the same time. I'm not worshiping him. So the end of the Haftarah here presents a perfect example where, the challenge, leaves us here with a challenge. It says we all have a challenge of seeing people in our lives that we can judge them either positively or negatively. Naaman in this story, if somebody would look at him, they would say, ah, an idol worshiper. Look at him. He's bowing down to the idol just like his boss, Melech Aram. And that would be a perfectly legitimate read of the situation. But it would be entirely false. And it would be wrong. And that's why Elisha says to him, "Vayomer lo lech l'shalom. Don't worry, you go in peace. You have nothing to, you know, to worry. You're not doing any, you're not doing anything wrong." But even though he's not doing anything wrong, the onlooker is challenged. What?
It will look like he did something.
Yeah, and the onlooker is challenged to say, "Am I going to, you know, sort of believe my eyes without any investigation, without any inquiry?" Without it, just make my assumptions. Yeah, he's an idol worshiper. And that's what idol worshippers do. And so the Haftarah leaves us with the challenge of how we engage in similar activities, in similar situations in our day-to-day life. That we are constantly given engagements where we can judge a situation one way or another. And it is up to us to resist the urge of lashon hara to judge the person poorly. Maybe it's true, and there's mitigating circumstances, and maybe it's entirely false. I know what I'm seeing, but maybe I don't know what I'm seeing. So lashon hara is the consequence for tzaras is the consequence for lashon hara. It seems to me, based on what we've developed here, that it's really a perfect response to Lashon Hara. Because if Lashon Hara is about assumptions, Tzaras is all about determining facts and truth. And the Haftarah is a perfect Haftarah for the Parsha, because if Lashon Hara is about, you know, making assumptions and judging people short, the Haftarah shows that in spades, how everybody there, you know, if they, you know, were wrong in their assessments. And the Haftarah ends with the challenge of a situation with Naaman goes out and Naaman can be judged poorly, or if you scratch the surface and find out, you'll know that there's really nothing wrong with what Naaman is doing. The only person here who seems to be okay is the prophet Elisha. Elisha seems to be on the up and up. And how do you know, or how is it reflected that he's on the up and up? Because when Naaman comes and says to him, "I want to pay you for your services," he says, "No, I don't do this for money. This is not about money." And he urges him. So after he urges him, he could say, "Okay, all right. I didn't want to do it, but now, you know, I'm not asking for it, but I'm happy to take it." But even after Vayiftzar Bam, even after he tries to pressure him, Vayiftzar means strong pressure. Elisha says, "Vayimayim." He refuses it. Because Elisha is apparently a person of integrity. And he's the only one who comes out really smelling sweet in this story. And that's integrity, not just as you see that he didn't take the money, he didn't want to be tainted. Not that people shouldn't get paid for services, but that's not what a prophet does. A prophet's not for sale. A prophet doesn't get paid for services. And you see that, and you also see that, you know, he's the one who really is able to explain to King of Israel, to explain to Naaman. You know, he shows integrity throughout the story. So lashon hara, tzaras, haftarah. I think it all comes together in this theme. Okay, we'll pause here.
Second handout was.
Yeah, the second handout.